I'm Brandi Cruz. Coming up today on Undivided, Governor Jay Inslee is forced to see the danger of his policies up close.
The last 4 years have seen a dramatic shift in the honor and respect for those in your profession. It's disgusting.
Also, Trump and Biden clinched their respective nominations after Washington's presidential primary. Plus, a Boeing whistleblower found dead of an apparent suicide. We'll talk about what we know, that and more coming up today on Undivided. Remember, you can support our show for just $5 a month by signing up at undividedpod.com. Hello, 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 and welcome to Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much for your continuing, dedicated commitment to giving common sense a comeback. Man, it feels a little bit like a Monday today, just because we didn't do a show yesterday. We were up in Everett for the memorial to honor fallen Washington State Trooper Christopher Gadd. Always devastating. You know, I've covered a lot of those when I was a member of the media, and that's the second one I've actually been there for. And I think those always do two things for me. It's sort of like, one, it's obviously sad and emotional, but also it's warms your heart to actually see an outpouring of support from the community for law enforcement and all the members of law enforcement gathered. I thought one of the really touching aspects of it was Trooper Gadd's, not only is his father a Washington State Trooper, but his younger sister is a member of the equivalent of the State Patrol in Texas. And so she actually was there in uniform, and members of the Texas Department of Public Safety came up all the way from Texas to be there with her, and they were kind of sitting in the front row near the family, and of course you could spot them with their cowboy hats, and it was just a really wonderful show of support. And I, you know, want to acknowledge that before I get into some of my political takes on the day and, you know, the meaning of it. And for those of you who aren't familiar with Trooper Gadd's death, murder, he was working a DUI patrol on I-5. He was pulled over on the side of the road to catch DUI drivers when an alleged DUI driver who was high and drunk slammed into the back of him and killed him. Gadd was only 27 years old. He'd only been with the State Patrol for 2 years. He has a wife and a 2-year-old daughter. And the man who killed him is in the country illegally. And so this is a story that obviously is devastating no matter who killed him, but has taken on, I think, different political connotations and become part of a larger national debate around illegal immigration. And particularly in the case of the man who killed Trooper Gadd, you know, he's had many run-ins with law enforcement over the past decade in Washington State, and there were opportunities, if we weren't a sanctuary state, for him to have been deported from the country, and for us to, you know, not have been there yesterday, for Trooper Gadd to still be alive, to keep our community safe, and to be a husband and a father. So all that aside, I'm glad we went, and I know some of you were there as well, and so it's important to especially in a state like ours, in a climate like ours, pay our respects and let all members of the law enforcement community know that they are appreciated by the vast majority of us. But I will say it's hard to ignore some of the politics at play with the climate around law enforcement right now. One thing I was pretty surprised by is Governor Jay Inslee was there. Now, in the past, Governor Inslee has been explicitly told not to come to the funerals of fallen officers. That has happened multiple times over the years that I've covered these, where the governor was explicitly asked by the family not to attend. And that is because there's this feeling that he has pushed policies and pursued policies, like sanctuary policies, that have, you know, made the lives and the jobs of law enforcement more dangerous and more difficult. And I really thought that that was probably going to be the case again. I just assumed, I don't have any inside knowledge of the family's political beliefs or leanings or what they were thinking with who they wanted to come and not, because it is up to the family ultimately. But I just figured, you know, I'm sure Governor Inslee won't be invited just because a lot of law enforcement families tend to not like him very much. But he was there. He got walked in and seated about half hour before the event began. And I gotta say, I'm really glad he was there. I did not think I'd feel that way. I was really glad he was there, because he had to sit front row, 10 feet from the casket holding the body of a Washington State trooper who was serving his state and serving the governor, Trooper Gadd. And not only did he have to sit there in front of the casket. He had to sit right across the aisle from Trooper Gad's young wife and Trooper Gad's two-year-old daughter, who was doing what a two-year-old does. You know, she's too young. She doesn't know what's going on. She was, you know, waving to the honor guard and, you know, trying to talk to them and going up to the tables holding all this, all these memories and pictures of her dad. And Inslee had to sit there and he had to see what that loss looks like and what that loss feels like and how many people a loss like that devastates. I will also say that for the first time, I think, ever in all the memorials that I've been to or covered for a fallen officer, things got, I won't say political, but there was some honesty up at the podium about the climate for law enforcement, some brutal honesty. And it was really freaking refreshing. I think sometimes with these people want to, you know, there's kind of a decorum that's expected and, you know, you don't want to offend anyone. But Matt Karchunas, I'm going to probably butcher that name. He's a pastor at Faith and Victory Church in Auburn. And he is a pastor for the Gad family. So he knew Trooper Gad well and the rest of Trooper Gad's family well. Well, he got up and I'll tell you what, first of all, he was very passionate and upset and reflective of what a great guy Trooper Gad was. But he also said this, again, just a few feet from Governor Inslee.
I honor you who serve and protect our communities. My late father retired from the Seattle Police Department. Every one of you is to be commended for your work. But the last 4 years have seen a dramatic shift in the honor and respect for those in your profession. It's disgusting. You need to hear that what your work that you do is worth it. Chris saw all of that over the last 4 years, and he still stepped up. Those in law enforcement today, I want to finish by speaking to you because your job and your profession is one of being on watch. And it's an honorable profession that should be held in high regard. And no one fully understands the life you live and the pain you carry. Chris and every single one of you stand as society's first and last line of defense. Thank you.
Yeah, amen. And I think that's something that room needed to hear. But the person who I believe needs to hear it the most was sitting in the front row. And that was a powerful thing, to sit there knowing that that was being said to Inslee's face. And that between that pastor and Governor Inslee was the casket holding the remains of Trooper Gad. And across the aisle was a young wife and a two-year-old girl who lost the most important thing in the world to them. And look, I never want to put something like this on the shoulders of one person. But you can't deny that had it not been for our sanctuary policies, which were signed into law by our governor, which he fully supports to this day, that the man who killed Trooper Gad would not have been in this country anymore. ICE would have had him deported. You know, we'd still have local jurisdictions working with ICE to get dangerous people out of the country who didn't even bother to come here legally in the first place. So again, I'm not going to pretend to know the motivations of Trooper Gad's family at all. I'm not suggesting that this was their motivation. But by having Inslee there, I think it was a more powerful punishment for the governor than asking him to stay away. All right. Yesterday was, in case you didn't know, kind of went under the radar a little bit, I thought about it after I was like, we canceled the show on the day of Washington's presidential primary. But it's just because to me, it's just sort of a matter of course thing. But if you weren't aware, yesterday was the presidential primary for Washington State. And actually, it ended up being pretty significant because it was Washington that gave specifically our primary that put Trump over the threshold that officially helped him clinch the Republican nomination. And also after all the primaries that happened yesterday, Biden has clinched the Democratic nomination. None of that is a particular surprise, but I like that Washington had a little bit of a, was a little part of it. So no surprise, Joe Biden got the vast majority of the support in Washington state with 88 delegates. These are the latest results, about 560,000 votes. And remember, this is of people who participated in the Democratic primary process and checked Democrat on their ballot. I want to make a note about the uncommitted delegates, because this was sort of a more progressive push to choose uncommitted delegates and not choose Biden. And they didn't even meet the 15% vote threshold to be able to actually steal any delegates away from Biden. But 48,000 people, almost 49,000 people chose uncommitted on their ballot. Still some results to come in, but obviously Biden is just fine in Washington. And then on to Donald Trump and how he performed. I was very curious because Republicans here tend to be a little bit more mainstream and moderate, and I knew that Nikki Haley would get a big chunk of the vote, although if you hadn't cast your ballot by the time she dropped out, so, you know, because that kind of happened right in the middle of when you got your ballot and like halfway through that. So early voters, I think maybe there was a lot more Nikki Haley, and then she drops out and it's like, well, are you really going to fill in a circle for someone who says that they're not running anymore? So Donald Trump securing 40 delegates here in Washington state, getting 74% of the Republican votes for that primary, 442,000. So fewer individual votes than Joe Biden, but a pretty big chunk of votes went to Nikki Haley, 129,000 plus, 22% went to Nikki Haley. And so I thought that that was pretty significant as well. It's just this weird, rich, like sort of irony in Trump crossing the finish line for the nomination in a state that his leaders detest him the most. I just had to think about that a little bit. I will say, so I was still at home, even though we didn't do a show yesterday, you know, diving into the results as soon as they came down at 8 p.m. And immediately I noticed a problem. So I go to the Secretary of State's website around 8 p.m., the first ballot drop hits. And immediately I'm like, this is not adding up. The math was all crazy. So you had, whether you were looking at the Democratic results or the Republican results, it had, you know, the vote totals for, you know, let's just take the Democratic side, Biden, Phillips, Williamson, uncommitted delegates. But even, and then it had a total that said like 500,000, 583,000. But I was like, that's not adding up, because I was adding up all the votes for individual candidates, and that didn't add up to 583,000, not even close. And then I was like, well, maybe that's the total between the Democratic and the Republican primary. I tried to do the math that way. That didn't work. It was the same thing over on the Republican side with their numbers. I'm like, the number of votes per candidate isn't even coming close to matching up with the total number of votes. And I put it out on social media and tagged the Secretary of State's office, as did Jim Bruner over the Times, which I was glad to see, because I'm like, am I crazy? Because at first I didn't see anyone else in the media being like, what's up with these numbers? And then I saw Jim Bruner at the Times being like, is anybody else seeing some mathematical issues on the Secretary of State's website? So I was tagging the Secretary of State's office, and man, half hour goes by and the results are still up like that, clearly woefully messed up. And so I'm like, the Secretary of State's office has to be putting something out saying that they're looking into this. And I go to their site. Nope. They did, however, put out in six languages that the drop boxes were closed. So they managed to put it out in six languages that you couldn't vote anymore, but no sort of mention or utterance all evening about what was going on with the ballot totals. And some people were in my mentions saying, well, maybe that's the total number of ballots that were turned in, including ones that haven't been counted. And I'm like, no, that's not how it works. That wouldn't make any sense, because you don't really know at 8 p.m. how many ballots have been turned in, because you might still have some in USPS system or that have just been pulled out of ballot drop boxes. So I'm like, there's no way that's it. So Nicole reached out last night, right, to the Secretary, this morning to the Secretary of State's office, and they did get back to us. And I was sort of thinking, they're going to find some weird excuse as to why the numbers didn't match up, but they owned up to it, which I was glad to see, because you need to do that when you have some sort of snafu. The Deputy Director of External Affairs with the Office of Secretary of State, Steve Hobbs, said, thanks for reaching out. As results populated on our website yesterday, we quickly noticed the math discrepancy. Within minutes, the Office of Secretary of State Elections team found that the problem was, for this unique election, that some of the district fields were inconsistently labeled or left blank. When the labeling inconsistencies were corrected, the page results displayed as they should have. The time on the corrected numbers being available was 8:36 p.m. He goes on to say, I was on the phone with a journalist at that very moment discussing the issue, and we both hit refresh and saw the correct results. As soon as I got the 8:36 message, the issue had been addressed. So 36 minutes went by, which actually in election time is pretty significant. And look, is it the end of the world in a presidential primary process? No. You fixed them at 8:36. I'm not sure I fully understand what the issue really was or how the issue came to be. But the bottom line is, I mean, we're living in a time in this world where people are very skeptical of our election process. I think some of that skepticism is off base. I enjoy my mail-in voting, but I do understand the issues with it. And I think when you have a segment of the population that feels so disenfranchised by our voting system and has lost faith in it, when things like this happen, there needs to be an immediate response. And the fact that there wasn't a response immediately, proactively from the Secretary of State's office saying, hey, we understand that there's a math discrepancy, we're working on it, identifying the problem and then immediately pushing it out to people. Here was the problem. I don't think that they did that. In fact, this morning I looked on the Secretary of State's website or a Twitter account where a lot of people follow them for up-to-date information, and I didn't see sort of what happened, and I pushed out this comment from the Secretary of State's office to keep people in the loop. Like, hey, remember yesterday the math wasn't adding up and people had all these wild conspiracies? Well, here's what they said happened. So there's this element of like, I'm glad they sent an email and acknowledged we had an error, but man, we can't afford in this climate to have errors where the vote totals aren't matching the vote counts. We just, especially when it's off by like 300,000, we can't have that. And so I would just encourage the Secretary of State's office to be more proactively transparent when they do run into an issue. And 36 minutes is a long time when you're talking about such a significant mathematical error. And had this been like a general election situation, I don't think people would be as quick to kind of forgive and forget and be understanding. So I just wanted to let you guys know, because I was pushing this out on social media, that that was their explanation for it. The district fields were inconsistently labeled or left blank. So we'll follow up with them and make sure this issue has been resolved and it's not going to be a problem moving forward. Okay. One more thing I just want to point out. Bob Ferguson. Man, he's having a field day with this. So now that Trump is the nominee, presumptive, which we kind of knew anyway, right? But that gets him across that finish line to know that there's no sort of challengers out there that are going to beat him. Now it just is, that is a fever dream for the left. They love it. And in Washington State, as much as they already tie everyone to Donald Trump, now that he's for sure going to be the nominee, they're like, absolutely have a field day with it. And so Bob Ferguson, who's running for governor, he's the attorney general, and we presume that Dave Reichert, former congressman, former King County sheriff, will be his Republican opponent, very likely. So we said on Monday how Bob Ferguson, during the legislative session, there's a freeze where he can't be out there campaigning for funds. Man, as soon as that freeze lifted, he was on Twitter or his staff just, oh, Dave Reichert and Donald Trump. What is the song? Dave and Donald sitting in a tree. K-I-S-S-I-N-G. That's Bob. That's like, might as well just tweet that out. Although I just gave Bob a really good song if he wants to like take it. Sorry. But anyway, so Monday, he's already over the weekend. After the legislative freeze happened, he sent all these tweets. Today is day 255 of Republican Dave Reichert's campaign for governor and day 255 of hiding whether he supports Donald Trump for president. If you're afraid to say who you support for president, how can you make tough decisions as governor? That's just how I'm so angry, you know? Anti-choice Republican Dave Reichert remains silent on whether he'll vote for Donald Trump. He lacks the political courage to stand up to Donald Trump. We have just 3 days until Tuesday's presidential primary. Will Congressman Dave Reichert have the political courage to tell Washingtonians that he's voting for Donald Trump? And I was like, gosh, man, get it out of your system. Holy moly. And then he didn't let up. So Tuesday and just yesterday, he said, today is Washington's presidential primary. Anti-choice Congressman Dave Reichert is scared to admit the candidate he's supporting. He ducks. He dodges. He will not stand up to Trump, and he will not stand up for Washingtonians. And then today, he sent out this Seattle Times article where they were talking about the results of the presidential primary, and in it, they talk about the fact that Dave Reichert won't say whether he supports Donald Trump, and Bob Ferguson tweets that out. He ducks. He dodges. It's like, dude. And I retweeted it, and I'm kind of like, obviously he can't win, or he's scared that he can't win just on policy, because Bob Ferguson's policies are so deeply unpopular. He would much rather see you obsessing over and talking about, oh, will Dave Reichert support Donald Trump, than he would have us talk about the fact that he supports decriminalizing hard drugs at a time when more people in our state than ever before are dying from hard drugs. Like, let's talk about that, Bobby Ferguson. No, I can't talk about that, because that's not popular with people. But you know what else isn't popular in Washington? Trump. So that's all he's going to focus on. It's already exhausting. I asked you guys in our daily subscriber show poll about this, though. Like, does it matter to you? Do you think that Dave Reichert should come out and take a firm position on whether he supports Donald Trump? Or are you perfectly fine with him just sort of saying, which is what he told the Times, that, look, they're trying to fearmonger and distract from state issues with this whole Donald Trump thing. And I tend to agree with that. That's what I see as well. But you guys, in our daily show poll, 88% of you on Patreon right now said, no, I don't need him to come out and take a firm position on whether he supports Trump. Cheryl says, too many things can happen in the presidential run before November, and he could be stuck. Waiting and timing is a great military tactic. Joan says, yes, I would, but I like what Senator Kennedy has to say, too. Watch him on YouTube dress down these heads of department that aren't doing their job. Let me see. Hugh says, guilt by association is a thoroughly discredited tactic, yet in common use. I associate Ferguson with McCarthyism, not because they knew each other, but rather because McCarthyism is alive and well today in Washington, and people still fall for it. And that is true. And the right does this too as well. In Washington state, you'll have, if Republicans want to paint a Democrat as extreme, they'll put him next to a picture of Pramila Jayapal. Or they'll put him next to a picture of Shama Sawant, and they'll say, this person is the same as them. And usually it's unfair. Sometimes they are, but usually it's unfair. So let's not act as if Republicans don't try to compare every Democrat to the most extreme example of a Democrat, and Democrats do it to Republicans as well. And Democrats have had a lot of success in doing it to Republicans when it comes to Donald Trump. So why would they stop doing it if it works for them? I mean, I think the way around that is you just have to, you know, make a point to ignore it personally, but also talk to your friends about it. Like, hey, you know, here's the reason why they're trying to focus on that, because he doesn't want to talk about his record on crime. He doesn't want to talk about the fact that he said 3 years ago we should decriminalize hard drugs and now we're in the midst of an overdose crisis. Or he doesn't want to talk about the fact that his office has gotten in trouble a bunch of times for violating the Public Records Act or for withholding public documents. Let's see. I'll just read a couple of responses on X. 50-50 on X right now. Lily says, it doesn't matter to me who he votes for president. What matters are the policies he supports from both presidential candidates. Reagan says, from a strategic point of view, absolutely not. He will alienate too many people on both sides of the aisle. And if he comes out and supports or denounces Trump too early, this issue could be his downfall no matter how he lands, unfortunately. Let me see if I've got any good responses over on Locals. I want responses from everybody today. Patreon, Locals, X. We love our wonderful subscribers. Coogs Will Roll says, just let Sideshow Bob make an issue out of nothing. It is diversionary. His TDS will consume him. And that is what it is. It is TDS. One more. Weisscastle says, it won't be easy, but he needs a clear response. Something like, as governor, I will work with whomever the people elect as president for the betterment of Washington State and not waste time or money in pointless political feuds. Yeah, and I will give... I don't do this often. Is this a Jim Bruner story? Hold on. Yeah, I will give Jim Bruner credit in the Times because he brought up the fact that, you know, in the gubernatorial race, in this article about the results of the presidential primary, he said, Attorney General Bob Ferguson has hammered his likely rival, former U.S. Rep. Dave Reichert, over his refusal to say whether he'll back Trump this fall. And then he said, Reichert, in a statement, did not say whether he supports Trump and called Ferguson's efforts to nationalize the race a distraction and fear-mongering. Quote, this race is about what really matters to the people of Washington state, rising crime, homelessness, gas prices, taxes, and education. So I kind of like that Dave Reichert's not falling for it. And he's saying, this is what they're trying to do, and I'm not going to let them do it. I'm going to steer it back to the issues that are actually impacting people in our state. And the reason I wanted to give credit for Jim Bruner is he pointed out that Reichert criticized Trump in the past. He declined to endorse him in 2016. He suggested in 2017 that he might have arrested Trump when he was sheriff over his lewd comments about grabbing women's hoo-haws. So, you know, that's fair. He has been critical of him. He is no Trump fan by any measure, but I don't know whether he would plan to vote for him or not. Okay, moving on. Wow, I was just like, I'm just going to breeze past the presidential primary. I have a lot to say. I'm very excited for 2024. It's going to be an interesting election year. All right, wild story that has everyone's spidey senses up. So there's been a lot of issues with Boeing lately, and a high-profile Boeing whistleblower is dead, found dead of an apparent suicide, although some people are questioning that official narrative. We'll get to what we know coming up next. First, we've been talking specifically to those of you who are looking to sell your home in 2024. 2023 was not a great year for home sales. I mean, let's not put lipstick on a pig, right? And so there's this thought that the Fed will drop interest rates this year. They haven't done it thus far. So what will that mean for home sales in 2024? Wes Jones with sellwithwes.com says he thinks there will still be some improvement whether interest rates change or not.
If we're sitting stagnant at where we're at now, we're still going to see more sales. We're going to see more people transact in 2024 than we did in 2023. I feel really strongly about that. Nationwide, we sold about 4 million homes, residential units, in 2023. I think that's going up. It'll be more like 4.5 million. There's too much pent up demand. If they stay where they're at right now, I actually think that values will stay closer to where they're at. We'll see lower appreciation. We'll see appreciation, but it'll be modest. But if they start to come back down, well, that's when I think we'll start to see more of the multiple offer situations and the bid ups in home sale prices.
So if you're thinking about putting your home on the market, check out our friend Wes Jones at sellwithwes.com. The first thing he's going to do is give you a free market analysis. So if you're wondering, gosh, is this now a good time to sell my home? What can I expect to get for it? How long would it sit on the market? All of that. Reach out to him, sellwithwes.com. He'll talk to you about their Listing Boost concierge service. You can also start by using their home value calculator there on the website to find out how much your home is worth. It might be worth more than you think. Sellwithwes.com, a better way to sell your home. All right, a high-profile Boeing whistleblower has been found dead of an apparent suicide, although we'll discuss some of the concerns with the official narrative on that. But if you're not familiar with John Barnett, here's a little bit of background from NBC News.
So this is my retirement plaque.
Barnett retired from Boeing in 2017 after working as a quality manager for more than 30 years. Since his departure, he has taken legal action against the company, claiming he was retaliated against for raising safety issues internally, issues that Boeing denied at the time. Back in 2019, Barnett sat down with Today, describing a haphazard safety culture at Boeing.
From day one, it's just all been about schedule and hurry up and just get it done, push the planes out. We're behind schedule. You know, we don't have time to worry about issues that y'all bring up.
In 2017, the FAA released a review upholding many of Barnett's concerns.
And now he's dead. Barnett was found dead in Charleston, South Carolina over the weekend. According to police, officers were called to conduct a welfare check at a Holiday Inn. When they got there, they found him in the driver's seat of his truck in the parking lot, with a gunshot wound to the head, and he was holding a handgun. Now, his family told CNN, or told NPR rather, that his case was still heading to trial in June, so in just a few months, and he was, quote, looking forward to having his day in court and hoped that it would force Boeing to change its culture. CNN reports, the incident report noted that the hotel had received a phone call from a, quote, Rob, who requested the welfare check on, quote, his coworker, John Barnett, which led hotel employees to the truck in the parking lot. Now, look, I'm not saying that I don't think he committed suicide, but I think that whenever you have circumstances like this, especially in today's day and age and internet culture and stuff, you're going to have some natural questions. And I do think it's appropriate to go over this with a fine-tooth comb. And I think what the family told NPR there is very interesting. You know, here you have a guy who has gone through this years-long ordeal where he did the hard part already. You know, he blew the whistle. He's been on national news. He's been pushing for reforms within Boeing. And he's finally going to have his day in court in June to try to prove what he's been saying all along and do what he wants to do, change the culture around safety at Boeing. And he winds up dead of an apparent suicide in a truck in a parking lot of a hotel. So this is definitely something that I saw a lot of media outlets being highly critical of, which I was glad to see, even outlets on the left that I would typically think would just sort of, oh, conspiracies or whatever it is. So we'll be following this. I mean, you know, if we believe what the report says, and he committed suicide, it's obviously very sad. And I'd like to know more about what might have been going on, what else in his life might have been going on besides the stress of this Boeing situation. But I think that this is not the end of this story. And what happens to his case moving forward? I mean, I would assume that if he is the plaintiff and he's no longer with us, that there wouldn't be a case moving forward. So that's sort of a next step in this as well. But a really, really odd story.
I'm really worried about Boeing.
What is going on? All these issues with planes and...
Typically, I'm one of those, well, if, you know, the percentage is, you know, 0% of planes crash or have issues. We're just very aware of them happening right now.
Because it's scary.
But right now... It seems like that percentage might have ticked up a little
wheels
bit.
Wheels falling off, we've doors blowing out.
Running off the runway. We've got, just a lot of these people telling us that they're rushing through the assembly lines. And I don't know. It's getting a little nerve-wracking.
I still realize it's a low percentage of chance that something's going to happen. However, I used to be the person who was, I'm still proud of our Boeing workers, but who would like, I'm not getting on an Airbus. Like, I don't know who made that, but Boeing was made here, you know? Right. This was made in Washington. So there's some pride in that and some comfort in a job well done in the sense of safety and security. And so I don't know if I quite feel the same way. And it was after that, you know, the Max whole debacle with the Max planes, where I was like, I'm not getting on a Max they sort it out. And I think a lot of people actually felt that way.
They've got to figure out how they're going to handle this. It seems like it's a very slow roll on calming people down.
And having your chief whistleblower wind up dead in a parking lot of a hotel is only going to intensify things for Boeing. So wild story that we will absolutely be following. All right. Hey, Nicole, we're getting to an unbelievable
Sorry.
Are you just super excited about this segment today?
You know, typically we hit it a little bit earlier than 12:30.
That's not true.
I don't know why I'm in that rush syrup mode.
You know, you're really passionate about the story.
I guess.
Before we get there, I've been talking about my success on the Eastside Weight Loss Clinic program, and I love hearing your stories of success as well. I mean, this is a program where if you follow it, you will lose weight. There's just no way around it. And for me, the benefit of this program is you lose the weight quickly. I lost almost 30 pounds in my first 2 months. I'm down almost 40 pounds total. I started this process a year ago, and so I've stuck to it longer than I've stuck to any other program. And the maintenance aspect of it is easy. You know, I can go out and have a couple drinks and eat foods that I really, really like. And, you know, that some diets are like, you can never eat that again. You don't feel like you're on a lifelong diet. So if you've been thinking about, I mean, we're a couple months from summer. Under this program, if you stick to it, you could see substantial weight loss by summer. A lot of patients lose 20 to 30 pounds in a month or two. That's not an atypical result. So schedule your free 15-minute consultation with Dr. Ryan Coogan and his team just to ask any questions you have. Make sure the program's right for you. Not every weight loss program is right for every person, but they'll answer your questions. EastsideWeightLossClinic.com, EastsideWeightLossClinic.com. All right. We talked on Monday's show about the fact that the King County Sheriff said they were not going to enforce an ordinance on the books in the city of Berrien that prohibits public camping in certain areas of the city. Well, we criticized the King County Sheriff for making that decision, and now they're doubling down, and they've decided not only are they not going to enforce it, they are going to sue the city of Berrien over it. Let's get to it in our segment, Unbelievable. Yeah, King County, man, they just really don't want Berrien dealing with the homeless. And this is a frustrating situation, I think, for any city like Berrien that has to rely on the sheriff's office. You know, that's their contracted police services. And now you have a sheriff that's a politician. That is a political appointee. Because King County voters said, no, we don't want to elect the sheriff anymore. We'll let politicians appoint the sheriff. As if that wouldn't mean that a sheriff was completely beholden to a politician. So anyway, we've talked a lot about the homelessness issue in Berrien. Our friend Jonathan Cho covers it extensively, and we've had him on the show a few times to talk about it. There's been a lot of testy city council meetings in Berrien over what to do with the homeless encampments that keep popping up in very public, very high traffic areas. And the city just decided, look, we have these, you know, whether it's a park or outside the library or whatever it is, we can't have encampments and all the issues that come along with it, substance abuse, crime, etc. We just can't have this. And so they passed an ordinance that initially is in line with a federal court ruling out of Boise, Idaho, that basically said, yes, you as a city can tell people they cannot camp on a sidewalk or public place as long as you have shelter to offer them. So that's sort of the trade-off. Like, you can't kick them off to nowhere, but if you're saying, I got shelter for you, they don't take it, then no, they can't camp on the public sidewalk. So the city of Berrien took that a step further and also has a map with some areas that are just expressly off limits for camping. And what King County came out and said last week behind the scenes to its own deputies, the King County Sheriff, Patty Cole Tyndall, told her deputies, we're not going to enforce this new version of this ban in Berrien because I don't think it's constitutional. Didn't talk to the city of Berrien, didn't tell them, hey, we're not going to be enforcing your new ordinance, just told deputies, stop doing it. So the city of Berrien was livid. They're like, you're responsible for, we contract with you to keep our community safe. And we're finding out about this. They found out about it from our friend Jason Rantz over at KTTH because he got this memo and that's the first time they found out about that. That's insane. So anyway, King County and the Sheriff's Office and the Executive Office, they faced a lot of criticism over the last few days for their decision not to enforce this ordinance in Berrien. And what do they do in response to that criticism? They turned around yesterday and they sued the city of Berrien. Wild stuff. They filed a lawsuit against the city of Berrien, essentially seeking clarity and direction from a judge to definitively say, is this iteration of their camping ban in Berrien, is it unconstitutional or not? And what Sheriff Patty Cole Tyndall says is, hey, if a judge rules and we get some finality on this, that it's constitutional, you know, we'll live up to our obligations and we'll go ahead and enforce it. But it just... it's the incompetence of government. I think all of this speaks to it. What a disaster. So you've got a city that contracts with the county for law enforcement services. And the county has a problem with a law. So instead of going to, like, adults, right? And going to the city and saying, hey, we think this is unconstitutional. What can we do here to figure that out before I put my deputies in a position to maybe enforce something that's unconstitutional? Do you understand where I'm coming from? Instead of doing that, they just wholesale, nah, we won't do it behind the scenes. And then instead of the two sides coming together, which I heard there is maybe a meeting that's coming up, they're going to have a meeting and sit and discuss. But instead of doing that first, King County sues them? And meanwhile, they're just trying to keep their sidewalks and their parks clear of all these camps that are ruining their business environment, that are making the community less safe. The government's incompetent. What an absolute disaster. And on top of all of that, I said on Monday, I think this was not a decision from the sheriff. I think this was a decision from King County Executive Dow Constantine, who is now in control of the sheriff because the sheriff is a political appointee. Well, Sheriff Patty Cole Tyndall, amid all this backlash, held a press conference yesterday. This is a report from King 5 that I think has a good back and forth between the mayor of Berrien and the sheriff.
This is all motivated by politics.
Berrien Mayor Kevin Schilling believes...
I appreciate that question.
King County Executive Dow Constantine is behind today's announcement.
The chief says whatever Dow Constantine wants her to say. She's the appointed sheriff of the King County Executive.
This is 100% my decision. The executive gives me full authority for the operational considerations for the King County Sheriff's Office.
I don't believe you. I don't believe her. I don't believe that as a politically appointed sheriff that you can make a decision like that 100% on your own. That just doesn't make any sense. As a politically appointed sheriff, you're telling me you didn't go to Dow Constantine and say, hey, let's sue them over this? Come on. You're not going to file a lawsuit against the city of Berrien without the permission of the King County executive or without his sign off. And as the mayor of the city of Berrien pointed out previously, when they were discussing this with the sheriff's office, it was Dow Constantine's press person who was responding to them. So if the executive's office isn't involved in this decision-making, why is his press team responding to the city of Berrien? So what a disaster. And this just shows we're never going to fix this freaking homeless crisis. We're never going to fix this homeless crisis as long as we have ideologically driven leaders in charge who believe they know best. That they know best. And we're not going to criminalize homelessness. And they tie the hands of everyone else who wants to do something, who wants to address the issue with common sense. And we wonder why the homelessness crisis is worse now than it's ever been before. So it's wild. And, you know, I get it that there are some legal concerns here. And in fact, I think later this month or next month, the U.S. Supreme Court is going to take up an argument that the Boise, Idaho ruling That says basically you can remove them if you've offered them shelter, that amounts to cruel and unusual punishment. I don't think the Supreme Court will believe that. There have to be some restrictions. You can't just have a free-for-all like you can camp anywhere, because that infringes on other people's rights as well. And what about the rights of people to move about freely? What about the rights of people to not have tents blocking the storefront that they're trying to make a living off of? So that's absurd. So there's a lot, legally speaking, that's going to be happening in the next few months with this. But I'll be interested to see where this case goes and how it damages long-term the relationship between the King County Sheriff's Office and some of the cities that it's contracted to serve. Okay, let's see here. We're going to get to a congressional hearing that happened yesterday with the special counsel, Robert Hur, who had investigated the whole Hunter Biden, Joe Biden business dealing, or part of that, but combined with the documents that Joe Biden had in his garage, right? So we'll talk about that coming up next in National. First, I've been talking with our friend Zach Abraham about the state of the economy and how, gosh, you can't believe anything here. Can't believe what Joe Biden says about the economy. Can't believe what the news media says about the economy. And so if you're close to retirement or you're trying to manage your own retirement portfolio and you're like, I don't even know what to do. These stocks are soaring. Should I buy those or whatever it is? For instance, NVIDIA is a stock that's just been going gangbusters that everyone has been talking about. But Zach says, you know, they specialize in risk management. He says when he sees something like that, he tells his people to stay away from it, and he gives them alternatives that would be just as good.
We own a company called Taiwan Semiconductors. Okay. They're up more in the last month than NVIDIA is. All right. And they're trading at like 26 times earnings. Well, guess who makes NVIDIA's chips? Taiwan Semiconductors. So if NVIDIA is going to be this hit, how does Taiwan Semiconductors not also benefit from it? And yet you're buying a rock solid company with a rock solid balance sheet trading at 26 times earnings. It doesn't make any sense, right? And I think AI is going to be a big deal, but you're in the middle of a bubble right now and people are being stupid. They're just being stupid and they're being greedy and they're being driven by the fear of missing out. And there, and again, it's not even a smart risk, because if NVIDIA is going to be all that it is, it's already gotten the majority of those gains. Go buy the stuff that's way cheaper and that hasn't gone through the roof yet.
Yeah, and look, maybe you can afford to be stupid and greedy, as Zach put it. Maybe you're a multi-billionaire and you can afford to take some risks here and there. I know I can't, and I imagine that a lot of you who have worked hard for every dime that you've put into your retirement can't either. So having someone who can actively manage your risk is really important. I suggest having a free Know Your Risk portfolio review with Zach Abraham and his team at Bulwark Capital, because this is what they do. This is what they specialize in. The review is just a great way to see if you're overexposed to risk. There's no obligation. In fact, Bulwark doesn't even let you invest with them at your first meeting. So schedule your free risk review now at knowyourriskradio.com. That's knowyourriskradio.com. Investment advisory services offered through Trek Financial LLC, an SEC registered investment advisor. Investments involve risk and are not guaranteed. Past performance is no guarantee of future results. I am over it with congressional hearings. Absolutely over it. What a disaster. What a meaningless, performative disaster. And this goes for both sides. You have these congressional hearings, which you've got powerful, important people, consequential people who are summoned before Congress. And all it is all the members of Congress see it as, is they're, you know, 5 minutes in the spotlight. And they don't care to actually glean information from the witnesses. They don't care to actually get information for the American people. They're just there to do whatever benefits their side of the political aisle. They're just there to make statements, performative statements. And I don't know if I've ever seen a worse example of that than the testimony that happened yesterday by Robert Hur, who is the special counsel who conducted the probe into Joe Biden's handling of classified documents. So remember, he had classified documents all over the place, including like next to his Corvette at his house. So Robert Hur was facing questioning from members of the House Judiciary Committee. Well, who sits on the House Judiciary Committee? Congresswoman Pramila Jayapal of Washington. And this, again, probably the worst example I've ever seen of how utterly worthless congressional hearings are.
So this lengthy, expensive, and independent investigation resulted in a complete exoneration of President Joe Biden. For every document you discussed in your report, you found insufficient evidence that the president violated any laws about possession or retention of classified materials. The primary law that you analyzed for potential prosecution was part of the Espionage Act, 18 U.S.C. 793E, which criminalizes willful retention or disclosure of national defense information. Is that correct?
Congresswoman, that is one statute that we analyzed. I need to go back and make sure that I take note of the word that you used, exoneration. That
Mr.
is not a word
Kerr,
that
I'm going to continue
report,
with
that's
my
not
questions.
Part of my task as a
I'm going to continue with my questions. I know that,
that I
the term
that I ultimately reached related
I know that
to whether
the term,
sufficient evidence existed such that the likely
you
outcome
you exonerated
would be a conviction.
Him. I know
I
that
did
the
not
term
exonerate
willful
him. That word
retention
does not appear in the report,
has a Mr. Hurd, it's my time. Thank you.
Genuinely embarrassing. That's genuinely embarrassing. And it's like, don't bring up the issue if you're not willing to defend the word you use. And clearly he wasn't exonerated. In fact, I would argue it was the opposite. Where it's like the special counsel's like, yeah, he did this, but he's too old and frail and elderly, and he's not going to be convicted by a jury. And that's the calculation that we've made. And as the special counsel rightfully pointed out, it's not his job to exonerate someone. You know, if they end up going to trial for something, it's the job of a jury or a judge, depending on how you've chosen to have your fate delivered to you. So that's just embarrassing stuff. And it was something very similar from Congressman Jerry Nadler, where he just, you know, could not accept that the special counsel was trying to correct a falsehood.
At any point in your investigation, did you have any reason to believe that President Biden lied to you?
I do address in my report one response the president gave to a question that we had posed to him that we deemed to be not credible.
Was it clear he didn't lie?
I'm sorry, Congressman.
The report is clear that he didn't lie.
And then he just moves on. He has somebody whisper in his ear, like, just say it's clear he didn't lie. So he's asking this of the special counsel, is it clear he didn't lie? And when the special counsel doesn't give him the answer he wants, he goes, your report is clear he didn't lie. Useless, worthless. And also, who are these for? Who are these performances for? And I'll say, like the whole handling of classified documents thing, Matt Gaetz actually said something I agreed with for once, that all we ask for is for Trump and Biden to be treated the same. He didn't ask that, you know, oh, let's have one be exonerated and one not be exonerated. Just treat them the same. And I think it's fair to say that they weren't treated the same. But also, Republicans acted like Trump's were no big deal, and now they want to go after Biden for his. And so I don't think Republicans have treated them the same either. Democrats haven't, Republicans haven't, because it's all performative, right? There is no moral compass or moral consistency there where they say, here's what's acceptable to me for a politician to do or to not do, and I'm going to stay the course regardless of what political party they're from. So it's all just an absolute sham disaster. Every member of Congress should just be wiped clean, and we should be able to start over. And I don't care to have congressional hearings if this is just what they've devolved into. But I also, like I was saying earlier, who is the performance for? Because an average American isn't tuning into a congressional hearing, right? And I would argue an average American isn't even going to watch news about a congressional hearing. So you're performing for an audience that is either already, that's already picked its side, I would say 99% of the time. For Republicans, they're either performing for, you know, people who are pro-Trump in that instance, or they're already performing for people who disagree with them wholeheartedly. Like, I feel like you've already made your camp there. So I just don't understand whose hearts and minds are being changed by the approach that either side takes in those congressional hearings, because all you're getting are the political nerds who are watching this stuff. All right, before we get to questions and comments and our closing sanity check, oh my God, are we going to finish on time today? Mark this on the calendar. I've been talking about my friends at First Mark Insurance and encouraging you to switch over and become a member of the First Mark family. And there's a lot of reasons for that. One, it's a no-brainer because you don't pay them anything. And if you're not working with an insurance broker, especially in this market where insurance companies are dropping people left or right, you might be putting yourself in a pickle. If you get dropped by a carrier and then you have to go find one on your own, First Mark Insurance has a slew of carriers at their disposal. They shop the market for you. They come back to you to get insurance that fits your needs and fits your budget. And then also, you know, there's a little investment on the front end to do the First Mark Challenge. You schedule, I did a Zoom with them. You could schedule a phone call, talk about your insurance needs. They go out, they shop the market, come back to you and say, here's what we got. But one of the other things, it saves you so much time and energy on the back end. Mike and I just got an email because we're coming up on the 1 year. And proactively, they're like, hey, we're just checking in. It's a real human, by the way. It's a real human email that hasn't been auto-generated. And it's like, hey, we're just checking in. Here's what we've got for your insurance. Has anything changed for you guys? And I was glad that they did it because you know what I forgot to add to my insurance? My wedding band. So I had my engagement ring as part of my home insurance policy, and they'd had that in there, and they marked that. And I was like, oh my God, I didn't add my wedding band. So thank God I've got First Mark Insurance because they're keeping everything up to date. FirstMarkInsurance.com. Take the First Mark Challenge today. The very best part is they work for you. All right, questions and comments on Trooper Gad's memorial. Yernayan Samage. I feel like that's one of those that if I say it fast, it's supposed to sound like another word. So I'm being careful. Like, is it urine sandwich? Like, what is it?
Oh, geez.
Yernayan Samage. Or it's like, I don't know, Klingon. Former law enforcement officer here. I find it nauseating what the leadership of this state and country have done. I agree. On Donald Trump and the presidential primary, Shelley Rose says, I know a lot of people who chose not to vote because of the party declaration requirements. There's probably a lot more votes for Trump out there. I tend to agree. And probably more votes for Biden as well. But among independents, I don't know. I tend to think that a lot of those would have gone for Donald Trump or for a Republican. I mean, I didn't vote because I don't want the party designation. But had I voted, it probably would have been for a Republican. On Bob Ferguson, just Trump, Dave, playing the only card that he has. Travis Jackson says, that's the problem with Bob Ferguson. He thinks globally, not locally. And he's always thought above his pay grade, so to speak. You know, when he was on the King County Council, he had ambitions of being the Attorney General. So everything he does is about those ambitions. As he's been the Attorney General, he's had ambitions of being governor. So everything he does is about being governor. And then if he's the governor, he'll have ambitions of being president. Everything he does will be focused on national issues and not the state. And the state's flailing. We've got a million crises. We don't need some guy who's been dreaming his whole life about political office. We need some guy who was in retirement, living a perfectly happy life in Chelan and had to be dragged, kicking and screaming to run for governor because we need him that bad. Nancy says on Ferguson, Bob is just jealous that Dave has really nice hair. Yeah, probably that and all the muscles and stuff.
Agreed.
On Boeing, Greg Olakis says, this guy did not commit suicide. Did he know the Clintons? Let me see here. On Berean, Janelle Viegas says, these images are shocking to me. Growing up in Berean in the late 80s and 90s, you would never see that. That's true for a lot of places. Unless you were under I-5 in the jungle in Seattle or along the waterfront, there wasn't this, you know, profound of homelessness and drug crisis. Scott, on the appointed King County Sheriff, when you appoint the sheriff due solely on DEI criteria instead of meritocracy, this is what you get, an incompetent official. And I don't know that she was necessarily unqualified. I do believe she probably got the job because she's a black woman. I mean, that's just the state of things. That doesn't mean she's not qualified. I mean, Carmen Best, I think, was very qualified to be the chief of police in Seattle, and she just happened to be a black woman. But she'd done everything along the way to absolutely earn that job. But I do think that whether you're competent or not, if you serve at the pleasure of a politician versus serving at the pleasure of the people, you're going to behave differently to try to keep your job. Nancy, with a $20 super chat, I bet that Inslee wouldn't show up, so I'm paying up. Yeah, I'm actually surprised that he would show up as well, knowing that a lot of people in the room do not appreciate
him. But if you're
him.
Invited, you better go.
Yeah, and but, you know, you could always come up with an excuse not to go. I mean, there was a murmur across the room as soon as he walked in. There was, like, an audible, definite, like...
Yeah, but then that would be the news. So now if he just shows up, then it's not really news. Nobody really talked about it yesterday. There weren't any pictures other than that one that we
used. Yeah, Nicole had to go through the whole thing and find one little picture of half of an Inslee face because he wasn't part of the service or ceremony in any way. He was just there.
But if he hadn't shown up, then it would be why didn't he have show up?
I mean, like I said, I think it's a worse punishment for him to have to be there than to be absent, than to be told don't come.
I agree.
So, Baron of Gray Matter with a $5 super chat talking about Joe Biden. What's funny is he took/stole the documents back in 2015. He wasn't mentally deficient then, so to say he can't be convicted is ridiculous. And I also don't believe that the guy's president. Like, you're telling me that he's not competent enough to go be judged by a jury of his peers, but he's in charge of, like, 370 million Americans?
Right.
That's insane. So the whole thing is crazy. And all these, honestly, what's the point of the special counsels anymore? Because depending on the party that gets to choose them and decide what the investigation is, the other party doesn't believe a word of it. So there genuinely is no point.
For show.
To so much of what Congress does, it's for show. And it's like, God, we've got all these other issues. Imagine if they cut the performative politics and just focused on doing their jobs. But you can't expect that of politicians because everybody just wants their... I mean, that Jayapal soundbite is genuinely embarrassing. And then she was being criticized a lot for it. So she took to social media and she tweeted out the definition of... what is the word
exoneration.
She used? Exoneration. And I'm like, yeah, you tweeted out the definition and it clearly isn't what happened right. to Joe Biden.
Said,
he didn't
yeah,
get exonerated. The guy wasn't like, he didn't do this. No, he did. Just wild stuff.
Delusional. They've just been told, like, they've gotten away with it.
Of course, they've gotten away with it.
Now they just continue to see what they can get away with.
Well, they're pandering to their base. And as long as pandering to their base gets them elected, why would they not continue to do that?
Right.
And so Jayapal's going to continue to pander her to her base as long as it continues to get her elected. Mm-hmm. And the same with Matt Gaetz or whoever it is on the Republican side. That's what they're going to do.
Right.
There's no cross appeal there. There's no crossover appeal. No one's looking what Jayapal did and said, you go, girl. No one's looking at, you know, Jim Jordan or everybody like, you go, Jim, from the Democratic side. Yeah. It's ridiculous.
It's terrible.
It is. Okay, let's get to our closing. Wow, we are going to have a rare show where we end on time. Unless I just come up with something else to talk about. Cole's like, no, I will force you to move on. Let's end with a compliment for Seattle Mayor Bruce Harrell, shall we? I have had a lot of frustration over the years with the city of Seattle just not listening to constituents, everyday constituents who can't make it down to City Hall at 2:00 in the afternoon to shout and to scream like the professional protesters. And, you know, there's been times in the past where there had been some public safety forums that were being held. This is like maybe 4 years ago now. And it was like the council members were there in spirit, or they were there physically, but their mind wasn't there. They didn't care what people are saying. They didn't listen to it. So anyway, I want to give Mayor Harrell credit for now. We'll see how these go. But he is going to be holding a series of public forums specifically about public safety, where people can come, where they can ask questions. And I think that Mayor Harrell has done an okay job at saying what needs to be said on the public safety front. And you are going to be putting yourself in a situation where you're going to have a lot of people who are unhappy who come to these public forums. And I think he knows that. So I think he's owed a little bit of credit, although this is the bottom barrel of what we should expect for politicians, for going out into the community and prioritizing these concerns. His office just sent out a press release saying, today, Mayor Harrell announced upcoming public forums to discuss his vision for creating a safer Seattle and hear directly from community members on this important issue. So there's going to be several of them, libraries, public locations, etc. He says city leaders will join the mayor for an open discussion about community safety challenges, accomplishments, and opportunities. You can also watch it live online. And I think we'll watch these and see how they go. But I do think that Mayor Harrell is someone who understands the public safety crisis that we're in and that we have a long way to go to rebuild. And I think taking the time to actually sit in front of your constituents and let them talk to you about what they're dealing with every day, and genuinely taking the time to listen to them is a really good start. And it's something that we should expect at the very least from all of our elected leaders. That has been today's episode of Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. If you haven't already, shop our merch store at undividedpod.com, undividedpod.com. We got hats left. We got shirts left. In fact, we're moving studios soon, and I'd like to sell out before we move. I don't want to pack up the remaining merch we have and move it. So you'd be not only doing us a favor, you'd look really cool with your Common Sense 2024 t-shirt.
We're kind of teasing people with that crop and the cup because we're out of those. Sorry.
Okay, well, I guess we'll have to update our logo. Yes, we're out of the cups. And if you wanted a crop top, the crop tops are sold out.
Discontinued.
Unfortunately for you. We do have cool bumper stickers, though. Common Sense 2024. All right, undividedpod.com, undividedpod.com. That's where you can shop our merch store, but you can also find out how to support our show for just $5 a month. It's a screaming deal, especially in an election year. Undividedpod.com. We will see you back here on the live show tomorrow at noon.